Hour number two of the Triple Option with RBKD. Alongside Kevin Dunn, I am BK Brad Kellner. No Rod Babers today. No Rod Babers for the rest of the week. He's got a fair excuse to miss a week's worth of shows, KD. He's getting married this weekend.
Saturday night.
Mm-hmm. Independent Rod is leaving this earth two days from now. It's kind of tragic. So yeah. Because it's so tragic, we decided to give him a week off of work.
Yeah.
That's how nice we are.
Yeah, and he missed a fun experience out here.
He absolutely did. So we're broadcasting live from Total Care Primary Care, 200 Springtown Way, Suite 132 in San Marcos, Texas. We'll be here until 7 o'clock, another beautiful Total Care facility. Of course, there are a number of Total Men's Primary Care facilities, but this is a Total Care facility, so men, women, and children can come in here. COVID test, yep. Annual physicals. Of course, we're getting closer to school, which means we're getting closer to sports starting back up. $25 physicals here at Total Care Primary Care. There are four of these throughout Central Texas. We're down in San Marcos, but there's got to be one close to you wherever you are. But KD, we were set up outside, so yeah. The vast majority of the first hour of our program was broadcasted outside right in front of the Total Care. We were under a tent, but you know, we saw some lightning, we heard some thunder in the distance. Figured we had some time. We weren't too worried about it. Checking our phone weather forecast, and, well, of course, they were wrong. I guess no surprise there. But we saw 40% starting at 4 o'clock. We figured, all right, we're going to be fine with this thing. But, man, at like 3:45, it just started coming down.
Yeah, sideways.
Thunder, lightning, and pouring rain. And all of us, I mean, you and me and Trevor and Drake, who are here on our technical engineering side, and all the fine folks here at Total Care Primary Care, we all just picked up everything, all of our equipment, all of our stuff, and walked inside. So we had to set everything up inside, which is why we were off the air, and you heard Trey and Chad's interview with Justin Wells just now. So we're now inside. So I think it's very comfortable chairs, mind
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I like this.
But it was a pretty hectic 5 to 10 minutes here at Total Care Primary Care. And the good news is this whole place is inside, so you could still come out here and be taken care of. It's a brand-new facility. It's the grand reopening going on, but man, that was some adrenaline, KD. That's now two times in a row at a Total Men's or a Total Care facility where I have had a life-altering type of experience.
Oh, yeah, because the barbecue sauce at the other one.
Yes.
By the way, so we are inside, and most of these are kind of designed the same way. So this is where you were. I'm sitting right – I took this seat because I don't want you to run into this glass wall
again. I appreciate that. I wasn't going to sit in that seat.
I didn't think
I was
going to
sit on your lap if you were in this seat.
Well,
I'm not sitting that close to the glass stanchion again, dude. I'm scared.
Hey, shout out though to Drew and everyone here. I didn't have any questions about it, but they are team players and they all jumped in. We had doctors out there. They were picking stuff up and bringing it in. So if you have any questions about these people,
yeah,
they were answered.
They know what they're doing, but they're also great people,
yeah,
too. So, once again, Total Care in San Marcos. Come out and see us. We'll be here until 7. But any Total Men's or Total Care Primary Care, just get out and see them. Unbelievable. A lot has happened over the last week. You know, KD, I want to get into this. I want to transition a little bit and kind of talk about the 2021 Texas Longhorns. We'll get into the SEC stuff again. We're still waiting on an official vote from the SEC. We think that could happen today. A lot of reports are saying that will happen today. We're waiting on the results, and I'll keep checking Twitter just to make sure we're not missing anything or we're not leading y'all astray. But the Horn Top 20 countdown starts on Monday. Mm-hmm. We had a roundtable last month or a couple days ago Monday in Leander, but the actual Top 20 countdown will start next week. We'll pick a different team every single day on all of the shows and count them down from 20 to 1 as we inch closer to the start of this college football season. I want to ask you a question that I asked you during our roundtable on Monday after our show came to an end. Does Texas deserve a spot in the top 20? Are they a guaranteed top 20 team going into the season? I'm curious to see where the AP voters vote Texas, and despite the struggles on the field over the last 10 or 11 years, Texas has generally started seasons ranked in the top 25. I know Texas haters will have fun at that because it doesn't take long for the Longhorns usually to drop out of the top 25.
Right.
And it feels like they've been overhyped more often than not over the last 10 years. But in your mind, with what you know about this team, with what you know about this new coaching staff, do you think Texas deserves a spot in the Horn top 20 and also in the AP top 20 to open up 2021?
I think it's right there. So in terms of guarantee, absolutely not. There's no guarantee this is a top 20 team. I think they're right around anywhere from 20 to that 25 area. areas. So I do think they'll be in the top 25 of the AP poll. My guess is they come in at 22, 23 for the Horn top 20. We can have them in there, but it better be 19 or 20, right?
We probably will have them in there.
And we get that.
And we are partners with the University of Texas. So
right.
We want to, you know, make sure they're taken care of. But, yeah, you know, they're borderline top 20. I agree 100%.
But not guarantee, right?
I don't know if there are any guarantees with this team this year.
Yeah.
There are so many questions, right? A brand-new coach, a brand-new coaching staff. You've got more roster turnover than any team in the Big 12. Now you have this SEC question hanging over you. I don't know how much that should impact what happens on the field this year, but the players are going to be asked about it all the time. The coaches are going to be asked about it all the time. So that's just like another thing to kind of deal with, plus name, image, and likeness stuff coming into the equation for the first time this year. So there are no guarantees for this team. We don't know who the starting quarterback's going to be. There are no guarantees. There are more questions than answers. So, yeah, from a talent perspective and also from a coaching staff talent perspective, if that's a thing, I think Texas is a top 20 team in the country, but – man, more questions than answers, it feels like, with this football team right now, and we're 37 days away from the season opener.
Are you having this happen to you where, because of the news and because of how big it was, that you're processing different things at different times now, where something will come into your head that you haven't thought about with either the remaining time in the Big 12 or moving to the SEC? And I had that last night when I was thinking about the 2015 Oklahoma State game.
The rigged game?
It felt that way.
Yeah, it
for
was.
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't think Texas, like, Sark has his work cut out for him for a lot of reasons, and you just mentioned some of them there, but they're not going to get any favors the rest of the way. And if this is the last year, I mean, if they were able to do that in 2015, what could happen this year?
It's a good question. And the other fan bases are rolling their eyes right now. It's like, oh, you guys have gotten favors for years. Texas always gets the favorable calls from the
officials.
And
they have got some favorable calls.
They've got some. I think every school has benefited from favorable calls over the years. But
Texas has gotten screwed, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're dead on, right? I've spent most of my focus on the fans and just how chaotic opposing fan bases are going to be this year when Texas comes to town, because it might be the last time they can boo Texas. They do that anyways every year. But if you thought you had seen horns down before, you're going to see him way more, and you're going to hear more stuff talked towards Texas fans and towards Texas players this season than ever before. But, yeah, the officiating standpoint, I never thought of that. I mean, that's fair because officials are assigned conferences.
Yeah.
So we're talking about, like, Bob Bowlesby and Big 12 representatives and those type of officials losing their jobs. Well, these referees might be out of work, too. Like, they might have to find other jobs themselves. So
I would argue most of them should have been out of work in the Big 12 years ago.
Yeah, most of them should have been.
Find a different industry.
Exactly, a completely different industry, not just a different conference. But, yeah, I mean, it's you've got them probably ticked, and then you've got Bob Bowlesby in the higher-ups within this conference who might be saying, hey, yeah, if you get the chance to call an extra holding against Texas or Oklahoma this year, go ahead and do that.
Yeah, or just, you know what, we don't care. F them. Whatever happens, happens, and not regulate some of these some of these jokers that for every team, and every team's gotten some beneficial calls, every team's gotten screwed, so everyone kind of has that game in their head. For us, it's definitely 2015 OSU when that just went to a different level. I hadn't seen anything like that.
I mean, the ref bumped into Charlie Strong and then threw a flag. Called unsportsmanlike conduct when the ref went out of his way to bump into Charlie Strong on the sideline.
Right.
There was a defensive holding on a defensive lineman. I think Puna Ford
got
flagged for a defensive holding in
that holding game. In general and how late they came out.
Yeah, it was either 15 or 16 penalties on Texas in that game. A game in Austin, by the way, too.
Yeah.
Like, usually if something like that happens, it's because you're on the road and the refs want to home cook things a little bit and cater to the home crowd. That wasn't the case in that game in Austin against the Post.
No, I would just, if you're Texas and Oklahoma, and especially if it's, I mean, it's already going to be a done deal, but if we know that it's the last year in the last season, watch out.
Yeah, maybe if you're Texas and Oklahoma, you hold off on that announcement, or you try to hold off on that thing until like the very end of the academic year. Not just the end of football season, but like you're thinking about basketball, you're thinking about baseball too. It's like in all of the other sports, of course, you don't want to get screwed. So you would like for that decision to come down next summer, but maybe the writing's on the wall to where it's going to be 2022, and that's just what it is. Man, I hadn't thought of that. That is absolutely interesting.
I'm telling you, we're going to have a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah.
That as this thing goes on, you positive, negative, where you're at, where you were, where you're going, all that stuff.
So for you personally, back to kind of the top 20 discussion, You know, who's the most important player to ensure that Texas is a top 20 team? Obviously, the goal is to get to and ultimately win the Big 12 championship game, and you'd love to be better than top 20 if you can. But to ensure that Texas has a successful season, is it as simple as the quarterback? I mean, which guy or guys are you really looking at that you think hold the keys to making this thing be successful in year one?
I mean, obviously you look at the quarterbacks, but I'm going to look at guys who are going to be going one-on-one here in a little bit whenever we've got summer camp going on. You're going to have to get some better wideout play, and more importantly, the back end. The secondary just has to be better.
Yeah.
They've been space cadets at times, and you're in a league that we've talked about it. There's been a little bit of a shift, and it's funny how many good running backs are in this league. This is still a wide-open league, and you're still going to be facing some offenses that will put the ball in the air. And if Texas doesn't improve there, they're not going to be a top 20 team.
Where are you at with the safety position right now? The corners have some questions, but those are a couple of seniors. You've got Darian Dunn coming in, the grad transfer from McNeese State. Like, on paper, you should be better there than you are at safety.
Yeah.
You're replacing your two starting safeties, one of whom is Chris Brown, yep, who was your best secondary player last year. You're replacing Caden Stearns, who was up and down during his Texas career, but an NFL talented player, and you're replacing them with Brendan Schooler, a guy transitioning from offense to defense, Jaron Thompson, who looked good when he was on the field last year, but wasn't on the field a whole hell of a lot in 2020, B.J. Foster, who, yeah, a five-star, but he's had a very up and down Texas career. He's most known for quitting the team, I think, at one point, and then coming back to the team.
And yeah.
So safety position, like, does that concern you more than the corners, or where are you in terms of that spot right now?
I like Thompson, and I think we saw a lot of Thompson, especially in Kansas State, where he made a lot of mistakes, too.
Sure.
We talked about the eye candy in that game, and that got a couple of the young guys defensively that were playing in that game. Hell, got a couple of the veterans. I like Thompson. B.J. Foster, to me, is kind of that wild card there.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Kwiatkowski can come in and do what he does well, which is take guys, hide their weaknesses, and play to their strengths – we know that B.J. Foster, I'm still cool with B.J. B.J. Foster could be a really good run type safety, right? He's got to get better at angles. He's got to get more sure at tackling.
Yep.
But we know the physicality's there, and we know the athleticism's there. And I think that he's going to use him that way. The question is, how good and how much better can he be in coverage? In terms of Schooler, I mean, I saw Schooler play safety at Oregon. That's what he played early on.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be solid. He's not going to be great. He's going to be solid. The question is with Thompson and then Adam Moore, is he in that nickel spot? Kind of. It's going to be weird too because we talk about traditional safeties. We're going to see early on with Kwiatkowski how there's going to be a 4-2-5 element. There are going to be some other weird, almost positionless type players out there.
And PK loves the single high look.
He absolutely does.
A lot of pressure on a safety. Whoever that single high safety is, they're going to have to be on their P's and Q's. Otherwise, that's going to make life very, very tough for the 10 guys in front of them. I'll take solid with Brendan Schooler.
Okay.
If you tell me he's like a 5 or 6 out of 10, I'll take that. The most shocking personnel thing that's happened this offseason for me was B.J. Foster not being on the number one defense for the orange-white scrimmage.
Yeah.
Like, I just assumed. I'd almost sharpied B.J. Foster in as one of the starters at safety, and then he's not even a starter during the spring game.
Do you think that was a signal being sent to him that
I hope it was.
Yeah.
I hope it's not he's really bad. He's not good enough to start.
That's the other thing.
Like, the signal would be, all right, like, you got some work to do. Just because you're a five-star, just because you're the oldest guy here and you've been playing this position the longest doesn't mean you're going to be a starter here. I would prefer that over he's just not that good. Because if that happens, look, you got Thompson, you got Schooler, you're not completely screwed back there, but you need depth at that position.
Yep.
You really do. And if B.J. Foster can't even give you that, then that's a big cause for concern in this conference especially.
I want to ask you about the cornerbacks because I'm probably a little bit more worried about the safeties, but the cornerbacks aren't too far behind. I mean, there's experience coming back, but how much can Texas actually juice them up? Because some of that experience
illegal.
Coming back.
I don't think you can, right? They still drug test
here. You know
what I'm
talking about. Coach them up.
Coach them up.
Scheme them up.
A little different than juice them up.
Well, yeah, juices for all those things.
Are the coaches giving them juicy juices on
the
sideline?
If I was talking about offensive linemen, then I'd get it.
There you go.
We're not doing that with
we are going to the SEC,
That's true.
Never know. I mean, I would love for the ball-hawking DeSean Jameson to return. No picks last year, had three the year before. He's a great returner. I don't think there's any doubt about his return ability. He can be a game changer as a return man, but he's not the greatest pure cover, keep your guy in front of you corner there is. I think what makes him special, and Rod's talked about this a lot, is his ball hawking ability. So if that comes back, and if PK's defense can find a way to create some takeaways to make life easier for a first-year quarterback on offense, that would be absolutely massive. So I would love to see that from DeSean Jameson. And you'd think those guys are good. I mean, they've been starters for multiple years. It's not just like seniors who have been behind guys, so you have questions like, oh, are they ever going to be good enough? It's make or break time for DeSean Jameson and Josh Thompson. So have I seen enough consistency from those dudes over their time at Texas? No. You used the term space cadets a few minutes ago. Do I agree? Yes. Way too handsy when the ball was in the air. Like, that stuff has to change. And what scares me is, what is this, third defensive backs coach?
Yeah.
And their third defensive coordinator since coming to Texas. So they're learning new scheme, new terminology, new technique, and sometimes that's tough to learn. Now, I feel better about those guys this year than I did last year because those guys were all learning new schemes and new everything with no spring. So that made life very tough for Chris Ash and all of the players too. But the one thing, not the one thing, but something that gives me hope is it's make or break time. It's senior year.
Yeah.
And look, if you play at Texas, you got aspirations of playing on Sundays. So this is the last chance for DeSean Jameson, who has NFL potential for sure. Like, he's going to get looks just as a return man alone, but like, to make sure he gets drafted and maybe creeps up a few rounds higher, he's got to show that he can play corner. And same thing with Josh Thompson. Like, if that guy wants to be a Sunday player, an NIL deal with Last Stand Hats is not going to help. You got to find a way to produce this year. So Darian Dunn too, right? 1 year of eligibility, the grad transfer from McNeese State. So do I have questions? Yes, but the hope is maybe better coaching or juicing. And the sense of urgency that these players should hopefully have, especially the seniors, will help take care of things a little bit.
Yeah, that's optimistic right there.
Oh yeah.
And look, I mean, I did talk to some people that they looked better in the spring with PK's system. It was eyes on the quarterback a lot more, taking chances, and that's where Jameson, I think, is going to have a good year. But in my experience, even though we've got different coaching coming in, and I do think better coaching, if you've got guys that have been playing college ball for 3 years and it's that senior year and you're thinking you're looking for that big of a leap, that doesn't happen very often.
No.
More times than not, they are who we've seen them be. Mm.
Is that Dennis Green? Or
yeah.
Did he say that?
I think Denny
Green. A little bit different. Yeah, and look.
We are who they thought they were.
And you talked about it, man. I think the at least the defensive coaching hire that you were least optimistic about was Terry Joseph, the corners coach. Wow, I wonder if – could y'all hear that? I don't know who I'm talking to. Like, the listeners can respond to us in real time. But
I think they probably heard that.
That was a pretty loud thunderbolt out here in San Marcos. Thankfully, we're inside. But, yeah, Terry Joseph, I mean, I think I know where you're at with him. Do you feel better about him compared to Jay Valai?
No.
Okay. Because, like, that, you know, Jay Valai was unproven, sort of a young defensive backs coach. I think most Texas fans had bigger questions about Jay Valai than any of the other hires that were made last year by Tom Herman.
And you know who hired Jay Valai?
The cornerback play wasn't great. No, didn't he get, like, 8 jobs
this
offseason?
Yeah, 5 people hired him.
Okay.
But where he ended up, where he is right now?
No, and we talked about this 2 weeks ago, and I forgot.
Nick Saban hired him.
Okay.
So I will lean on that as opposed to Terry Joseph and Notre Dame people that I've talked to that said, hey, he's a great guy, but – you can always tell whenever you lose a coach. I mean, how pissed off were Washington fans?
Right.
Like, they knew what they were losing. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame people I talked to said, good luck.
That's what we had with Herb Hand
here
in Texas.
Austin's cool. We went down there.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was not a great time for Notre Dame.
They had a good time. But I'm worried about Joseph.
Okay.
And I hope to be completely proven wrong, and I'll come on radio and say, you know what? I got bad info.
Yeah.
And I was wrong.
I hope that's the case.
I do too.
You know, for me, you talked about wide receivers and defensive backs. The trenches are so important.
Yeah.
And no one focuses on the trenches. Everyone focuses on the skill guys, the glamour guys. But you got to win up front. I think we feel good about the defensive line, especially the interior of the defensive line.
Good about that trench.
But pass rushing is a concern for me, because you're losing your only guy who had more than 2 sacks from last season. And Texas was not good in pressure rate or sack rate last season. And then offensive line, obviously. That's a big question.
Yeah.
We didn't hear about this in the spring too much, but, man, in the spring game, it felt like the two quarterbacks were running for their lives a little bit. And that's tough for any quarterback. But if you're trying to break in a first-year quarterback in a brand-new offense, you don't want him running for his life on every single play.
No, you don't.
So making sure that you've got – you'd love to have six or seven guys that you feel good about on your offensive line because injuries anywhere are inevitable, but especially there. But you'd love to have at least five guys that, like, okay, you feel good about, number one, for Bijan, number two, for making sure your quarterback has time to run this offense.
Yeah, Christian Jones at left tackle. I mean, how much better has he gotten? And – what has Kyle Flood been able to come in and do and clean up, especially technically? He looks like an NFL offensive lineman. I mean, he's got the body. He's actually pretty athletic, but he's got to get better. And really, that's for me individually and then turning it into a group. How much could Kyle Flood come in and say, all right, the technique was garbage? Texas had a second-round pick that the NFL said the technique was garbage.
Yeah.
At left tackle.
I think you're being nicer than what they were.
Oh, they were I was hearing that well before that kind of came out, just from people that really know offensive line play that said, man, I'm not getting the technique at all. And so for the NFL to have a consensus and say that and still draft him in the second round, that tells me that Flood came in and can very quickly make some changes where this line's going to be better. I actually feel better about the offensive line, certainly, than I do the secondary.
Mm-hmm. Very quickly is key there, right? Because I think Kyle Flood's going to do great things.
I do, too.
His team's O-line coach, but can he do those great things in the course of one offseason?
Right, and every guy's going to be different, and every fix is going to be different. There's some fixes that you can get done. Hell, you can get done in the spring, and all of a sudden the guy's gone from a 3 or a 4 to a 6 or a 7. And there are some guys, it's going to take a couple years, whether it's footwork, hand placement. There's a lot of things that go into it.
No doubt about it. The Horn Top 20 countdown starts on Monday. Will Texas make the cut? You'll have to keep it tuned in to the Horn to find out. Every show is going to discuss every single top 20 team. We'll count them down from 20 to 1, a different team every day as we inch closer to the 2021 college football season. KD, one and done. Up next, what you got for the people?
One and done. This is one of my favorite days whenever we're right there on the trade deadline. The Astros make some moves, but I'm really curious about my Cubbies. Rizzo and Bryant weren't in the lineup. We'll kind of take a peek around the league and see what could happen and what has already happened. Up next in One and Done.
I like that 5-star recruit at Kentucky. He's been here, and he's going to stay here. It's One and Done time. Here's Kevin Dunn.
One and Done time. One of my favorite things about this time of the year is the Major League Baseball trade deadline. I've been lucky. So for a majority of my life, being a Cubs fan, we were sellers. We were way out, and hell, we had already sold by June a lot of the time. But one of the things I like about it, BK, is one, there's just rumors all over the place. And now with social media, I mean, you're checking something right now. I've noticed you've been checking stuff, and a lot of that's probably trade deadlines.
Yeah,
stuff.
I was also tweeting out this segment too,
okay,
from the Horn Twitter account.
Well,
trying to give me some love. Yeah,
you're that good of a guy.
I got you, man.
But yeah, so trade deadline is tomorrow, and we've already seen some stuff. If you're just joining us, Max Scherzer is apparently traded to the San Diego Padres. So that could be huge right there. The Astros picked up a couple guys too. Kendall Graveman, Yimi Garcia. We'll get to Joey Gallo a little bit later because we can really blow that out. But I'm kind of curious what the next step is for a team like the Stros. They know they need to get that bullpen a little bit more stability and a couple more good arms. But they've done a really good job. For the Astros, who they are as an organization and as a franchise, they're not going to be at the top of the spending level, but what I like about them is when they're in, they'll make moves. We saw that with Justin Verlander. We saw it with Zach Greinke, and they understand what they need, and the next step is, okay, we're going to have to go out and address that, and they have so far.
That's been the biggest issue for the Astros since day one this season, right? The bullpen has just been so up and down. So, yeah, I mean, they diagnosed their problems. They know what they needed. They've got one of the best lineups in all of baseball. Their starting rotation has been, I think, surprisingly good. Right? People weren't exactly sure what it was going to look like with Justin Verlander out this year, but they've had one of the most consistent starting rotations in the league since opening day. But, yeah, the bullpen has been an issue, and they've gotten some guys. Like, they're trying to do it. Every year they try, and that's all you can ask from a fan perspective, is that your front office tries to address your weaknesses and they do whatever they can do. They might be mortgaging your future a little bit, but do whatever they can do to try to win one right now.
Well, that's what you try and do. You try and not give up too many pieces. And when we talk, when we get to Gallo a little bit, we'll get into that. But James Click, who's the GM for the Astros, says we've got 44 more hours to go, and we're going to use all those hours to continue to try and improve the roster. Here's the real question. The Astros, are they willing to go past the $210 million competitive balance tax? They did that last year. So we don't think of them as being big, big spenders, but if they do that 2 years in a row, you are at that level. And all of a sudden, it's funny with the Cubs, and I look at Ricketts. We thought Ricketts was coming in, and one of the reasons it was tough being a Cubs fan forever is because the Wrigley Company never spent, and they didn't need to spend, right? That place was packed. Mm-hmm. You don't need to improve your shop or your business if you're selling everything out. Why do I need to try and improve, right? I don't like that attitude. I like businesses like this one that actually will do that, even though they're doing good business.
Yeah, and sports team, you should want to win.
Sports team, you should want to win.
I know it's the business of sports. We've been talking about that a lot over the last
week.
But also, yeah, you should be trying to win, too.
Exactly. So we were sold the bill of goods as Cubs fans that they were coming in, the Ricketts were coming in, they're flush with money, and guess what? We're finally going to be the big boys that we should be. We're going to spin like the Dodgers and like the Yankees. Cubs did that a little bit, made a lot of improvements to Wrigley, or at least changes to Wrigley. Then you kind of find out that the Ricketts aren't nearly as liquid as we were hoping they would be. A lot of their value and a lot of their wealth is actually tied in to owning the Cubs. Well, that's going to be really good for them once they sell the Cubs. Mm-hmm. But right now, as the Cubs owner, it doesn't mean you go in as much. And you look at the Astros, there's a good chance that they could go past that. It's $210 million competitive balance tax. They go past that 2 years in a row. That just, for me, the narrative for them changes a little bit.
Yeah, they're not small market.
They're not.
I mean, they shouldn't be. We're talking about Houston, one of the biggest cities in the country. I think they're top five in terms of population right now, if you include Galveston in there. But, yeah, they're not acting like a small market team anymore. For a long time they did. And that's a very frustrating thing to be a fan of a team that acts like a small market team.
Yeah.
Like whether you're a small market or a big market, if your front office acts like small market, especially in baseball, where it's like, you know, there's no salary cap. It's like, oh, if you just have good ownership, if you have people willing to spend, you can be one of the bigger teams. You could be very, very successful. So it's frustrating for a lot of fans when that doesn't happen. And the Astros are showing repeatedly now that they are willing to compete and spend like a big market team.
They are. Richard Rodriguez and really Craig Kimbrel are the ones that I think the Astros could still.
No.
Yep, you got to hold it. Hey, at least I mentioned him late.
Yeah, we still have like 5 minutes left.
All right, well. Once I stop talking about him, you can drop it, all right?
Thank you.
But I could see either of those guys, maybe both those guys, but probably just one of those guys, and Kimbrel would be the way to go. Look, the Cubs are in seller's mode. They've already sold, they've already traded a couple guys, but the big guys they have left, the Bryant, the Rizzo, the Baez, and the Kimbrel are there for the taking. And the Cubs are just trying to get prospects back. So my guess is right now the Cubs are talking to as many people as possible, and probably the Astros, where Click is trying to balance out, okay, what do I have to give up to the Pirates to get Richard Rodriguez? What do I have to give up to the Cubs to get Kimbrel? I would think Kimbrel, the way he's pitching right now, I mean, this is old, Craig. He's gone back to Boston. That could legitimately win them a World Series. That's how big of a move that could be.
I think so, too. Right, the two bullpen pieces they've added to this point are solid.
They're
additions.
Good.
But, yeah, Craig Kimbrel has the chance to be really, really good. And you put him with Ryan Pressly at the back end of that bullpen, that you're not going to be blowing a lot of leads late. And that's been a big issue for the Astros this year.
Yeah, Graveman's a good piece. So is Garcia. And that's going to help out that bullpen that needs help. But Kimbrel would be a completely different story. Heard Kendall Graveman on MLB talking about the trade, and he was shocked. You know, he's with Seattle. Seattle's not that far out. You can drop it now.
Right, thanks.
Seattle's not that far off or far out, and I saw their GM, I mentioned this maybe a week ago, say, yeah, you know, we're really happy with where we're at. Almost felt like Major League and the hot blonde owner who came in who wanted to move the team down to Florida and get them out of Cleveland and wanted them to lose. He obviously doesn't want them to lose. He understands they're gaining experience. But they're almost ahead of schedule to where he was really hoping to get one big haul back of prospects and then with the Kyle Lewis's of the world get this going next year.
That's a small market mindset right
there. It totally is.
Yep, and that is not good. And Mariners players are pretty ticked.
They're pissed
with that trade. Maybe they just really wanted Abraham Toro. Maybe they thought they were the winner of that deal.
Maybe so.
Why are you bashing Abe T? Come on, man.
I'm not, and I saw Verlander. Obviously, he loves him because Verlander said, you know, shout out to you. Couldn't have done, and I guess it was a rehab without you, and they gave him a lot of love. But, yeah, the Astros are in a good spot right now, and I think it's 3 o'clock tomorrow is the deadline.
Yes, sir.
I think you are going to see one of those two guys get added, and just for my personal or for my selfish perspective, I hope Kimbrel is one of them. I hope the Cubs, it's weird to say this, man, but it's over with, and I'd have no problem. I hope they get rid of Bryant. I love Chris Bryant. I will always love Chris Bryant, but they're not going to re-sign him. They tried to offer him $200 million, and Chris Bryant is a Scott Boras guy and is going to ask for more money than he's worth. He is not one of the top 10 players out there like I thought he was or was going to be in 2016.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you 100%, but someone will pay him that type of money.
Someone will.
That's how it works, man. And it's always a tough question to answer if you're a front office, right? Like, do we want to spend – we want this guy, but we know the back end of this contract is going to look terrible, and we know we're going to overpay for this guy a little bit. Do we want to deal with the eventual downslide of this thing? Or if we let him go, we get nothing in return, and we're kind of giving away our chance to be competitive for the next few years.
It is cool seeing Toronto and also the Southsiders, Chicago White Sox, acquiring people and being very active. I mean, we've seen that with the White Sox really the last year on just how in they are, and they're trying to win right now. But for the Toronto Blue Jays, BK, it's been a long time since I remember Toronto being at this level. It feels like obviously they're stuck in the AL East, and you're always dealing with the Yankees, dealing with Boston. But they got Brad Hand, and that is a good move. That's a fun young team if you haven't watched them. They've got obviously Vlad Jr. They've got Bo Bichette, who's a badass. Kevin Biggio is another name. It feels like they've got the sons of all these guys we grew up watching. But I'm glad to see the Blue Jays in it. And I like when I see teams like that haven't been as active. Usually they're the sellers. They're the buyers now. They recognize this is their time to maybe make a run, and they're going to do everything they can, whether they're going to be big spenders or big market teams or spend like big market teams down the road. This year they are. We'll get to it coming up. I believe it's 6 o'clock. No surprise, though, that the Yankees jumped in. There were some people saying the Yankees are going to be sellers. What world are you in?
When does that happen?
It's happened once, and I mentioned it with Chapman, and they signed him the next year.
Yeah. Yeah, and they still think they have a shot, even though they've been very pedestrian. They're five games over 500 right now. It doesn't feel like a year to go all in, but the good news for them is Joey Gallo's locked up through next year.
Yep.
So even if the Yankees don't turn things around this year, which they, of course, expect that they will, they'll probably be good next year, and Joey Gallo will be a big part of that. So the move makes sense. It makes sense for the Rangers to give him up, and it probably makes sense for the Yankees to get him. But I hate the Rangers for trading him to the Yankees.
I know.
I hate the Yankees. Everybody hates the Yankees. I don't like that. That's not cool. I wanted to root for Joey Gallo at his next spot because I really like him. And now I can't do that.
Tell you what, though. They needed a left-handed bat, and that thing is 314 to right field, I think, in name only. I was watching the Red Sox Yankees one time, and the Red Sox broadcasting crew, the color guy, claims that he walked it off, and he said it's actually 311.
Oh, wow. I figured it was like 292.
Yeah, but it also carries there, too.
Yep.
So Joey Gallo could do a lot of things. We'll get to that a little bit more at 6 o'clock.
No doubt. We've got some breaking news. When we come back, it's official. Texas and Oklahoma are going to the SEC. We'll give you the latest when we return. It's the Triple Option with RBKD. You're listening to The Horn. Back here on the Triple Option with RBKD. We are broadcasting live from Total Care Primary Care in San Marcos, Texas. We'll be here until 7 o'clock. Come out and see us. 200 Springtown Way is the exact address. Get to any Total Men's or Total Care primary care facility in Central Texas. COVID test, annual physicals, whatever you need. Total Men's, Total Care has your back. It's official, KD.
Did you hear John's intro music there? Signed, sealed, delivered. I'm yours. Well done, John Reichel.
That is well done by John. It is a Motown-esque Thursday.
It is.
Triple option with
RBK. Brought all that together.
But yeah, why it makes a lot of sense is because it is official. 15 minutes ago, the SEC tweeted out and released an official statement. I will read it word for word. The presidents and chancellors of the Southeastern Conference on Thursday voted unanimously today to extend membership invitations to the University of Oklahoma and the University of Texas to join the SEC effective July 1st, 2025, with competition to begin in all sports for the 2025-26 academic year. I know. A quote from Greg Sankey, the conference commissioner for the SEC, said, quote, "Today's unanimous vote is both a testament to the SEC's longstanding spirit of unity and mutual cooperation, as well as a recognition of the outstanding legacies of academic and athletic excellence established by the universities of Oklahoma and Texas. I greatly appreciate the collective efforts of our presidents and chancellors in considering and acting upon each school's membership interest," end quote. So it's happening, KD, and it was a 14-0 vote. So for a while, we thought Texas A&M would officially vote against this. They had a Board of Regents meeting last night. Apparently, in an 8-1 vote, the A&M Board of Regents decided to agree to this expansion. So every current SEC member institution voted in favor of adding Texas and Oklahoma. And now it is official. The first report came down 8 days ago. And KD, it is going to happen. Texas and Oklahoma out of the Big 12, and they will be headed towards the SEC.
Yeah, we expected it. The only question is when, and you will continue to hear 2025. I would continue to remind people, don't flip out about that if you want this thing to get going quickly. We've talked about the pros and cons, and I definitely think there are a lot more pros to get this thing done as quickly as possible, and not just the Texas and Oklahoma, to the other schools too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, if you're going to be recruiting in a dead conference, you'd rather move on, even if it is the AAC and whatever that new thing
just
is.
Just to have something to sell.
Exactly.
You don't want to sell being homeless.
No.
No, that doesn't sell very well.
It's a tough sell.
Yeah, it is.
It is a tough sell. Mm-hmm. So I think that just don't worry about that. The fact that it's 14-0, I would love to get some truth serum and find out what every school, what their higher-ups, their presidents, their ADs really think about this. Is this better for you, Ole Miss? Is this better for you, Kentucky? Or is it, no, we know what we're in, and we know we have to say yes. And I'll continue to say it, man. There's no other conference that has their schools fall in line better than the SEC.
Agreed, 100%. And I think from a financial perspective, and that's not everything, but we are talking about a business here.
Yep.
And all of these schools have bills to pay.
Yep.
And athletics pays the bills for a lot of the academics and other things that go on at college campuses across the country. Some of the numbers that have been thrown around with a 16-team SEC with Texas and Oklahoma in the mix, it makes me think that it would be tough for any good president of a university to say no to this.
I totally agree.
Now, you're right. Like, that makes things a lot tougher. It's tougher for Texas and Oklahoma, of course, athletically, but it's obviously tougher for Kentucky and Vanderbilt and Tennessee and South Carolina, you know, some of the programs that have already had some struggles recently competing in the SEC in football. Well, it just got a whole hell of a lot tougher. But the presidents, the chancellors, they got to focus on the university as a whole. And once again, the money, financial numbers that we've heard being discussed, and I think some of these might be low balls too. I think it could even exceed the numbers that we've seen. That makes it tough to turn down.
Nope, you're exactly right. And that may be the only pro that you have there.
It might be.
But it's in huge highlighted letters, and it's a permanent marker, and it actually ends up being longer than the con list. The con list could be, hey, you know, where are we going to be in this thing? Are we going to get lost? The money at the end of the day is the biggest thing. I'll also say this. I think a lot of these SEC schools, certainly someone like Alabama is looking at it and saying, yeah, Oklahoma's been really good on the football field, but we've been better. And Texas has been a joke.
Yeah.
All they're doing is bringing in a lot of money and not a lot of substance on the field.
Yeah, there are some schools that aren't scared. I don't think Alabama's worried about this at all. Oklahoma's been one of the more dominant programs in college football forever, but they've been really good over the last 10 years, and we'll see if it translates. This is a big year for Oklahoma. We're talking about this being a big year for Texas, but OU has a team that could win the national championship this year.
Yep.
And that's been their biggest issue. They haven't been able to get over the playoff, but more specifically, the SEC hump. They've lost to three SEC teams in the playoffs that they've made. if they can get over that this year, win a national title, then go to the SEC within the next couple of years, that might instill some more fear in some of the other teams in that conference. But yeah, you know, from a non-financial perspective, KD, I don't know how much benefit this has for the SEC teams.
Yeah.
It makes it harder to recruit. We know A&M's biggest recruiting pitch is now gone, right?
Yep.
Like, that's how they've been able to recruit so well against Texas and against some other schools, is because they're the only Texas school in the SEC. Everyone wants to play in the SEC. The numbers are out there that more NFL draft picks come from the SEC than any other conference, way more than the Big 12, that's for damn sure. And now Texas and Oklahoma are going in there. That's going to take that advantage away for A&M, but it's not just for A&M, right? Like, I don't think Kentucky or Tennessee or any of those other schools are going to be able to say, oh, this conference is way better now that Texas and Oklahoma are here. Like, now Texas and Oklahoma are going to have that pitch, and that might take away from some of the other schools who have been using that to their advantage.
Yeah, it could. Did you see what Greg McElroy said, talking about Texas A&M recruiting letters?
I did not.
That the SEC logo, excuse me, the SEC logo is actually bigger than the Aggie logo.
On the jerseys?
No, on the actual paper.
Oh, wow.
On the recruiting, you know.
Yeah, about
letter
that
they send.
So now what happens?
Well, I mean, that has been a huge part of their pitch, and there was an AD came out, Bjork, and said that that has been our identity, and that has separated us. So I'm sure there are some Aggies that I know that were like, eh, I wouldn't have said that, and they probably don't agree with that.
No, but I think most Aggie fans, not all of them, of course, I think a lot of Aggie fans are embracing this competition and they're excited to get the game back. And look, if you're a Texas A&M fan, you have to feel good about where your football program is right now.
Yeah.
Facilities are great. You've spent on a coach who's already had success. You finished in the top four last year. Feels like the ceiling is very high for A&M football right now, and things are finally starting to click. And look, we know where Texas has been over the last decade, so I think you should be embracing that a little bit. But I mean, I think Ross Bjork's initial statements, it did make him look bad. I think that's how a lot of Aggies felt. And I think you talk about truth serum earlier, like, they would be against this thing, no question. But this was a safe face. We don't want to look like we're against it because that makes us look like we're against the conference.
Yeah.
And it also kind of makes us look kind of sad, like, that we're scared,
like scared
of Texas.
Right,
yeah, and that's like, that would be really, really bad.
And as you pointed out, on the field right now, they shouldn't be. You know who the best rep was for Texas A&M? Saw it last night. It was probably a 40-second interview, and he said everything that on Thursday I said A&M should say this.
Jonathan Football?
Johnny Manziel.
Yep.
It up. It's 40 seconds, and it was that. I mean, they should have just taken what he said, the president should have, and put it on an email and said, that's how we feel.
Does Johnny Manziel have more pull in that athletic department than Ross Bjork does?
I doubt that.
Like, if Ross Bjork says something and Johnny Manziel is against it, would it get changed? Is he like? Does he still have that type of status down there?
I don't think so. Mm. But it was so level-headed. It was exactly the way you should approach it. And I thought that, you know, I know not all the time. That's maybe not the guy you want speaking for you. But on that one, should have been.
And he was at a golf tournament.
Johnny sounded good, too, man.
Yeah.
I'm happy for him.
He was at a golf tournament, and he was wearing a hat that said hack on it, which I thought was kind of funny. I know it was a golf hat, but still thought it was funny. So there's the breaking news. It's official. We knew this was coming. We've been talking about it all week long on our show. We expected it to happen by the end of this week. And when we heard reports that there was going to be a conference call today with all of the SEC chancellors and presidents, the initial report said probably not going to be a vote, but what's the point of putting it off any longer? So the vote actually happened. It was 14-0. Texas and Oklahoma will be joining the Southeastern Conference. Now it's when. Now we try to figure out when. 2025, 2026, that's the year we keep hearing. That was in the Big 12 jargon. That was in the Texas-Oklahoma jargon. That's in the SEC jargon. Now it's how many times will Texas have to play the rest of the Big 12 schools before making this move?
That's the question. Yeah. I think we all agreed that this thing was going to be 14-0. I mean, all agreed once we got to late in the week, right? Late in the week last week, and certainly this week. So I know you're not surprised, but was there any kind of worry heading into it that there could be one or two that vote against? Obviously, you need 11, so that was going to be done.
I wasn't worried about four voting against.
Okay.
Would I have been shocked if A&M and a Mizzou or an Arkansas would have voted no? No, not really. But I think all week long on this show, I thought it was going to be 14-0.
Yeah.
Like, even after Ross Bjork made his comments, I think I was saying.
No, you were.
I'm sorry
if
I'm lying about this, but I think I was saying, like, they'll come to their senses.
We all three were.
And they'll realize, like, how bad this looks. And, like, you got to just ride with the SEC on this one. So No, I wasn't worried about this thing not happening. It makes too much sense from a business, from a financial perspective. You get to add those two athletic departments, those two brands. It's I'm not shocked that this thing passed and passed with flying colors.
And the bidding war with the new wave of viewership and viewing stuff with Amazon, obviously ESPN, this is going to be like it's going to be bigger numbers than we're seeing.
Yeah, let's continue to unpack this. The news is out. Texas and Oklahoma officially accepted into the SEC. That's the big story of the day. We'll come back. We'll talk about that more, what it means. We'll try to figure out how long Texas and OU will be in the Big 12. We'll try to figure out what's going to happen to the rest of the Big 12. Lots happening. Mm. It's been a pretty easy offseason, I would say.
It's been crazy, man.
It hasn't felt like an offseason.
No.
We'll come back. The triple option with RBKD.
Football season's going to be a downer.
It almost feels that way, man. Total Care Primary Care in San Marcos, 200 Springtown Way. Come out and see us. We'll be here for a couple more hours. More Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC conversation coming your way up next.